Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I remain Scott McNulty, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Scott. I don't have anything clever to say other than that
episode.
I traded in my phaser for a sword.
Ah.
I hope that was the right choice.
It was not the right choice.
Probably not. Phaser's much more advanced than swords.
Yes, and you probably have, if you're a Starfleet officer, training with a phaser.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not so much training in sword play, unless you're Sulu or Michael Burnham, apparently.
I guess.
Who knows? But we're here to talk about Discovery. Discovery? Is that how we're saying it? That's not how we say it. Discovery.
Sure.
Season 4, Episode 3.
Three.
Choose to Live. And those who are paying close attention to previous episodes of Star Trek Discovery, and more crucially, previous episodes of Star Trek Picard, may know what that title references. The Romulan slash Vulcan now, I suppose, Navarin sect of honest warrior nuns.
Yeah, we love them. The Kawat Malad.
They're great. And I enjoyed them in this episode too.
It's true.
I feel like it allows you, when you have a religious order, you can wave away a lot of poor thinking on the part of the warrior people by just saying, you know, they have certain skills. Maybe, you know, networking with other people is not one of them.
Oh, and, yes. yes, I have thoughts about that, too. Yes, the three different plots in this. Mm-hmm. I thought this was interesting that there is kind of a very, I know I like to use this phrase a lot on this podcast, but a very Star Trek-y plot with Burnham.
Yes.
And Tilly. Mm-hmm. And Burnham's mom. And a random nun who is killed quickly.
Don't bother learning her.
No. Although she has a really funny line, but that's it. And then we have these two other plots that are like the ongoing storyline plots. And so there's the Dark Matter Anomaly, or DMA.
DMA.
Catchy three-letter acronym there.
I think part of the point of that was that it is not catchy.
Yeah. That's the COVID-19 of its era. And it's and Stamets has to go visit some Vulcans to figure that out, and Book tags along. And then we have the other plot, which is will Gray just get a body already?
And I was quite touched at the last scene. I mean, you're listening to this podcast, so there are going to be spoilers. Gray does get his body, and it all works out seemingly. We don't know. There could be complications coming down the pike, but there's a very touching scene where Gray regains consciousness and seems to be himself. So,
yeah, this is the least of the three, so it's probably worth talking about at first. That this is, you know, Gray sort of finishes his 3D printing of the body and stuff, and there's a hollow guardian from Trill who is there.
Zooms in and says,
a little staticky, kind of a bad, only two bars.
Network congestion.
But they warn that, like, you could be lost as a part of this, which I felt like has not been discussed enough, which is like, this seems a little bit dangerous since they don't really know even what Gray is and why Gray has stuck around, and yet they're going to try to, like, extract him from Adira and from Tal, right? So the symbiont. So it's like a double kind of tricky thing here. I guess that's why you bring a Trill in to do the job.
I guess. And triple tricky too, because, you know, Adira is not the normal Trill.
Right, because they're a human. Right. Which is referenced by it's like, of course it would be complex with you, the most complex host ever. I like that, because it's like, yes, this is also unusual, and the Trill would know that this is an unusual host. I liked all that. This is, you know, there's not a lot of this in this episode. It is, I like that Gray basically says, no, I do want to take the risk, because if you think about it from Gray's perspective, Gray has been like a ghost only Adira can see for like a year after dying, but not quite dying. And that's no way to live, right? So I think that Gray is basically saying, I either want to be a real boy, or I want to go away. But this in-between state is the worst. And then it's just the waiting. And anybody who's spent time with a loved one in like a hospital or something like that, there's scenes where it's just, there's nothing to do but wait. And they go to the bar and play hollow darts. And there's a fireplace.
Fire everywhere.
Background. And there's a, I don't know, there's a Mourn alien off in the background because those guys have a drinking problem, I guess.
Yeah, they don't get enough drinking. That's the problem.
That's the problem. That's they need more drinks.
Tenfold.
Yeah. And Saru and Culber have a kind of a meaningful talk about making connections, and that Adira has had. And I was thinking, like, Adira's problem is that Adira is not from the past like the rest of the Discovery crew. And then Adira has also had Gray as this ghost that only they can see. And the problem with that is that, like, they've got a connection, but it's this part of their life that can't be shared with others. And so, you know, Adira being a little bit of an outsider, I think that that's one of the things that comes up in the talk with Saru and Culber, that this is probably going to be good for Adira as well as Gray, because Adira now doesn't have this thing. I did wonder, though, after that very nice scene where they talk to Gray and then Gray wakes up and they're all very excited and it's great. I did have that thought, which is, you know, they were kind of dating, and then Gray died, and then Gray's been a ghost, and it's like, that's going to be a little awkward, right? Like, are they going to start dating again or not? Is Gray going to go away?
People change.
Back to Trill, now that this has all been resolved? It's just kind of unclear what's going on there, but I thought this was fine. Like, it's not connected very well to the rest of the episode, but it is one of our ongoing storylines.
And they do mention that Gray wanted to be a guardian,
right?
Which is what this Trill who zoomed in is. And so perhaps they will go off and one assumes you have to do that on Trill.
Yeah. I wonder, I don't know what's going on in Alexander and with this character, but it feels a little bit like they're finding a way. It's something Discovery has done a lot, which is they make these plot decisions in a short period of time and then spend a long period of time trying to undo them. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's what's going on here, is that this whole plot line is really to get Gray a body and then send him off on his way off of the show. I don't know that for a fact, although I will say, I don't feel as strongly about this as my wife, but she feels strongly about this. She said, great, is this the episode where they can transfer him into another body and then send him away somewhere? I was I don't think Gray is that interesting, and I don't think Ian Alexander is a very good actor, and I would be okay if Gray went to Trill and became a guardian and left Adira, who is a much more interesting character, to be on the ship. But, you know, I don't get a vote.
No. Well, and I think really Gray's character is defined entirely through Adira's character's relationship to Gray, right? Obviously, for obvious reasons, because they were the only person that could see him for a long time. So I think that there's a choice there between, do we want to have yet another random person just hanging out on Discovery for no particular reason?
Yeah.
Or are they going to go off? Because I do think it was like, this is a good arc for that character. Now they have a body. Now they can go, and it'll be interesting for a deer. Maybe they'll do a long distance relationship kind of thing. Like,
maybe so.
We'll see.
It's just, I don't know what Gray would do on Discovery anyway. And although apparently they have so few people that they make one of their medical doctors also be a therapist. maybe there could be some training for Gray there, but I don't know.
Dr. Culber's very talented.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so this Lauren brought this up too. She's like, "Wait a second, he's just a doctor down in sick bay, and now they're having him be the therapist. That's like, you should have your own therapist." And I said, "Okay, they barely just started Starfleet again. I don't think they have qualified people to do this." And he's from the right era for all the Discovery crew. He like understands their cultural references and what music they like and stuff like that. And he probably took some, minored in it or something. And sure. And they're like, you know, we can't give you a therapist. And he said, I'll be the therapist.
Fine. I'll take the correspondence.
So that's my
course.
My headcanon version of why they would make a medical doctor into a therapist, like a guy who's usually doing scans with a tricorder in sick bay, and now he's having very serious emotional talks with yes. crew people in need. That's my best guess.
Well, the other kind of a related thing is apparently Stamets is the only person in Starfleet who can study the dark matter anomaly.
Okay, speaking of, we should probably move into the second plot, but yes, I had that same thought, which is this is that law of conservation of characters thing, and I was actually so happy that they're like, the Navarre Science Institute is going to work on this problem. Because it's like, this is a galaxy-spanning problem. Literally every scientist should be studying
this, and they should be
having conversations. And, you know, we don't need to see every scientist, but it would be really great if we didn't get the impression that literally the only person working on it is Stamets. Because he's a guy, and he's not even up to date on the latest, 900 years of research, right? And he's just a guy. But when they go to Vulcan, which they do, or Navarre, and they go to the Science Institute, where a scientific meeting is essentially a bunch of people sitting around quietly meditating for many hours, which I'm not quite sure how that works.
A fantastic conference room.
In a beautiful, amazing, again, using those LED walls to have like the background where there's like the sun is setting and there's like haze mm-hmm. in the mountains and stuff in the background.
Hovering and midair. It's beautiful.
It looked great. But the point is, I got so mad at the point where the entire participation by the Vulcan Science Academy is apparently that they checked Stamets' math and said, nope, that's not it.
Like, incorrect.
Well, what could it be? Why don't you work on what it is and not just invalidating this one random guy's theory, right? Like, we need to pull together is not... And I did laugh because that's a great Stamets moment where he says, I could do this myself, but you could help. You could make it faster, but I could totally do it. Which is like, that's right up his alley. Like, I don't
need your help.
I don't actually need your help, but they said it would be faster. So whatever. It's like, I don't know. I would like a nod to the fact that all of the most brilliant minds of the, whatever this is, 31st century are on it and not like, oh, we got this guy on a spaceship who's going to be working on this. And it's just him. It's just, he'll figure it out eventually.
I feel like that was very, like, obviously we don't need to, like you said, we don't need to see all these scientists. We don't need, having him go to the Vulcan or Navarran scientists is fun because they are still, even though the Romulans are, mixing in there now, they're still Vulcans. So they're jerks.
They're jerks.
And they just meditate and say, no, you're wrong. And they don't really offer up anything else, which I like. But just having a couple of lines of dialogue, like, oh, yes, all these other people are working on it, and we've combined their data, and now we're going to go to the Navarran Science Institute because they're the most sciencey people.
And they could have said, this isn't it, but, we will continue deep thoughts about this, and we'll let you know.
We will meditate.
But they don't do that. They don't say, we will continue thinking about it. They're like, nope, next.
You're done. No tachyons. Goodbye.
The problem still needs to be solved. I don't know. I think this is a case of the writers sort of not thinking big enough. And mm-hmm. I guess Stamets is going to solve the problem. And like, I'm okay with Stamets solving the problem because it is a TV show and he's one of our characters. But like, mm-hmm. to make it feel like he is going to do it all on his own, like, I would like the idea be that like he has taken the lead in coordinating the effort. And I just didn't get that sense that there's anybody working on this but him, and yet it's this galaxy-spanning problem.
And they could even have like a quick scene of him, cycling through a bunch of Zoom meetings with all different kind of alien scientists, and him just saying, no, you're wrong again, no.
Yeah, or just a scene where he is like, well, thanks for everything. Let's check back in tomorrow, and pulling his hair out and being like, ugh. I'm talking to the galaxy's most brilliant minds, and nobody has any good ideas. Like, that would be great. It would be good for Stamets because he's arrogant like that, and he like all these brilliant people, and they're stupid. They don't know what they're talking about. And it would get the sense that he's part of a bigger effort instead of it being just like him and his hollow board thing that he's got, and that's it.
And
the Vulcans go, nope.
No, thank you. It is surprising because one of the themes that we've talked about and they keep hammering home is that, it's all about connections and working together. And so it seems like a missed opportunity to give us this impression that it's just Stamets and five Navarrans who popped in to think hard.
Missed opportunity is, I think, the watchword of this episode. I didn't dislike this episode. I actually kind of like it. I just feel like it could have been better in some really fairly, I think, easy ways it could have been better. And so I'm frustrated by that. I do like it turns out that this whole thing with Stamets going to Navarre is apparently really more about Book's emotional journey, which is fine. Like they set up, we talked last time about Stamets and Book being together. And so Book tags along and ends up getting a kind of a mind meld to try to do that, Culber. I don't think you can do mind melds, can you? Mind melds are what help Book, not your words. He gets to, you know, not be guilty because he realizes there's nothing he could have done. They're like scouring his memories and there's no evidence of the tachyons, but there's also no evidence that there's anything he could have done. And it allows him to progress in his grief. And that part is nice. And I get why that's sort of like the most important part. At the end, he's like, he can watch the trees in the hollow in Burnham's quarters. And puts his necklace on again. And that's all nice. I like that part. Like the emotional, I don't know. Sometimes I think that this is a discovery in a nutshell, which is the emotional journeys all make sense, and then the other parts less so.
Well, they're just scaffolding there to get us through these emotional character notes. And I did like the Navarran president basically saying, you know, Book is obviously in pain, and she's like, you're not dealing with this well. She doesn't say it like that, but she's more diplomatic than most. Navarans tend to be, which I guess is why she's president. I wonder if Michael Burnham is upset with her. Anyway, we can talk about that when we get to
somebody's president doesn't ask to stand on the bridge and second guess Burnham. So big fan of the Navarran president.
That's true. Basically, the Navarran Book is like, I didn't think Vulcans had emotions, and she says, oh, that's an oversimplification. We do have emotions, but you can't apply logic to. This is not going to help you. Our way of thinking isn't going to help you because you have to spend a lifetime mastering it, and it'll just maybe for a moment help. So I like that. And then I like that she did the mind meld. I also like that Stamets is like, no, you don't want to, don't let them mind meld you.
Trying to protect Book. I thought that was really nice. Like that those guys have been at odds and he's trying to protect him. I thought there was a lot of really great Navarre stuff, and I wonder what they're hatching for the president and for what Navarre is going to do this season, because
I like that actress.
We get that. I like that actress. I think that character is really interesting. We get that moment where at the top of the show, which we haven't even gotten to yet, the main plot where she says Navarre basically wants to rejoin the Federation, but this is the fraught moment. This is the challenge here is we got to keep the politics going here in order for this to be a happy time where we can work together. And it's you should be part of the Federation again. But I also like her. Ironically enough, empathy with Book, where you mentioned her interaction with Book. She offers him like a beverage that's supposed to be calming for emotional distress, and he's like, how would Vulcans know about emotional distress? And she's like, look, we know. Like, we got it. I thought that was really, really cool. Also, she could have said, we live with Romulans now, don't you know?
No, it's been
there's a lot of drinking.
A lot.
and then I also thought that it was a really beautiful moment where after she breaks the mind meld and having witnessed the destruction of Quajan, she says, my condolences are inadequate. That's all she can say. It's like there's literally nothing I can say that can encompass how bad I feel about what I just witnessed, which is you watching your planet die. And I thought that was a really good moment of a Vulcan who's not going to be able to express emotion but can express something like it in words. It's a very Star Trek kind of thing to do, and I thought that was a really great moment when she says, my condolences are inadequate. She understands the scope of what Book is going through, and that's how she acknowledges that she can't express it properly. I like that.
I liked it as well, and I think that we're going to see a lot more Navarre-centric things.
Yeah.
So we'll see more. And this episode also has a whole bunch of Kwat Malat, which are the Romulan, well, I guess Navarran now.
Now sword nun, ninja nun.
Honest warrior ninjas. Nuns.
Well, when you're going to hire ninjas, be sure you hire honest ninjas.
That's true. Although, apparently, honest ninjas don't always hire other honest ninjas.
No, okay. All right. The shorthand here is that there's this one Kwat Malat nun who is on the run, and she hires, thugs. mm-hmm. who just kill people. Like that, well,
randomly.
That.
Not randomly.
That's not cool.
No.
I didn't like that because those are the ninjas who are like the thugs, and mm-hmm. and I didn't like that part of it. So okay.
Well, yeah. So this Quat Malat is out there causing trouble. She's stealing dilithium.
She kills
a
guy.
Nobody can understand why she kills a Starfleet officer
who she gives several opportunities for him to stand down, and he does not do it, and then she kills mm-hmm. him. Right, like that to show that she's sort of acting with honor, but she still kills a guy.
Well, you know, he did not choose to live.
Going for a phaser,
Jason.
Yeah.
He was going for a phaser. Also, one would think maybe he would call security, but whatever.
Yeah.
Heat of the moment. He's the first officer of what
you
is
got
it,
more
the
dilithium,
Creedence.
Man. Just let it go.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you're giving this stuff away. Yeah. Let them take it. There's a tracker on it, apparently. It'll be okay.
It's fine.
But he is a Starfleet officer. He is going to protect his mm-hmm. his dilithium. And he dies, and so they're like, "Oh no, why?"
It's not called live lithium, Scott.
That is true. And then they have to have a meeting, right, to figure out what's going on.
They do
call all the presidents and the admiral and Michael Burnham for some reason.
Well, and Michael Burnham's mom, which is why Michael Burnham is there, right?
That's true. It's like an awkward moment. You're like, "Oh boy, call my mom." It's the principal's office. They bring in your mom.
Yeah.
Her mom, for those who don't remember, is a Quat Malat. It is unclear to me if she's like in charge of the Quat Malat. I don't know what the organizational structure
is. Yeah,
it's
probably fairly flat. But like when she got thrown into the future by the suit, she spent time with the nuns, nursed her back to health. We hear in this one, mm-hmm. and like she became part of their order, and she's been living for a while in the future that the Discovery crew has only more recently. Joined, so she's got this whole history, and now she's just a cool warrior nun,
a cool warrior
lady.
Nun. And I should say the Quat Malat are ridiculous, and that's why I enjoy them so much.
I think they're very Star Trek-y, right? It's like this alien mm-hmm. race that has this, in this case, it's the Special Romulan Order, and they always tell the truth, and they're ninjas. It's like that's fun, and it was in Picard, and now it's mm-hmm. it's in Discovery, and I think they picked it up for Discovery because it was such a cool, fun idea. And I like it here. And they got a mission, right? Which is, this is something that I was saying earlier. I think the first, maybe even our last episode of last season of Discovery, which is I really want them to have the space to have episodes where like there's a Star Trek episode in there where there's a mission or something. Mm-hmm. And we get that. And this A plot is that, which is who is this person who is killing Starfleet officers and stealing dilithium, and how do we find her? And the Vulcans and Romulans, the Navarans, are sort of like, she's got to have a reason. We know her really well. This doesn't make sense. And like, how many times have Star Trek characters said that? Which is like, mm-hmm. you know, no. I know this person too well. They have to have a reason. So now this time, the Federation people are like, all right, well, we don't really believe that, and she killed a guy, but. For the interests of politics, like we gotta like listen to them, and so they send off in it's orchestrated really well. They send off Burnham and Tilly, because Tilly needs something new to do.
That's right.
With She's, Burnham's mom, and again, kind of ancillary extra nun who doesn't make it.
Extra nun, yes. And so Tilly also, this episode continues Tilly's kind of a journey of unease, I guess,
yeah.
Or restfulness, really, I think is what.
Or restlessness.
Restlessness, that's right. She's the opposite of restfulness. She doesn't know where she belongs. She doesn't know what she wants to do.
She's a little bit at odds. I don't know where this is going, but
I don't either. But
it leads to the great moment where she's holding a sword and then dropping a sword and says, I am way outside my comfort zone now.
Mm-hmm. You're like, who trains on a sword? Come on.
Yeah.
Let us use our phasers.
No, the problem I have is that they say you can't bring your phasers down to this moon that they're going to find this woman. And they're like, oh, well, that's not great, but okay. And then the ninjas beam onto Book's ship.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, we're on the ship. Let's use the
just
phasers.
Pick up the phaser. Okay. No, there's a sword fight.
We have not left the ship. We can use our phasers.
Yes. Yeah, that was... That
I was, thinking that same thing.
That was very silly. That's the spare Romulan is killed at that point.
She dies. And then the other one that they're looking for appears and is like, OMG, I didn't want any more
right
blood. And this is where we find out that this woman who is the fugitive stealing dilithium for unknown reasons, was the person who nursed Michael Burnham's mother back to health and
kind of
got her assimilated with the future.
Oh, before we go past the dead nun, there is that great scene where Tilly just keeps talking, and then and then the nun turns to her and says, "You think that I'm troubled by the fact that you are so enthusiastic? I am not." And Tilly's like, absolute candor. All right. Like, I love it. It's just a great moment of like, you think you're worried that because I don't talk, your talking bothers me. It doesn't. Like, it's almost aggressive. Like, I don't care. Like,
I don't care. I am not listening to you.
It doesn't matter to me. You're not offending me. Anyway, she was really good. And then she dies.
Yeah, she dies.
She's killed by ninjas. Ninja violence.
It happens more and more every day.
So
it's this dark matter anomaly.
Yeah, that's the DNA. You know, you gotta know about the DNA. All right, here's my complaint about this plot. I like it. Oh. I like it. I like that there's a cavern beneath the surface of this moon, and they beam down, and it looks like there's like a big graveyard there, and there's a dead body of an alien species they don't know, and it turns out that there's actually like a matter antimatter drive, and this moon has been converted. The line is like, this isn't a moon, it's a ship.
That's no moon.
That's, I don't know, that sounds familiar. I don't know what it's from. And that they've converted it so that they could escape their planet before it dies, and then they're going to go to this new planet that this place is orbiting around, and they're going to have a new planet, and something has gone wrong. Like, I love it. It's very Star Trek-y.
Classic Star Trek.
The problem I have with it is the resolution is so simple. It's literally like, oh, I fixed it.
Just have to reboot.
Burnham has to go to an alien race who's never been seen before to their computer interface and fix a couple of things, and then they all wake up and everything is fine. And I thought, as cool as this idea is, I feel like there's a missed opportunity here for a more Star Trek-y thing. I would have rather they had... I mean, okay, I'm half serious here in saying I kind of would rather there had been like an AI on the moon that Burnham had to do a Captain Kirk logic problem to confuse or convince or something. I wanted another step that wasn't just, if the lady with the sword will let us, we can solve this problem. I kind of wanted it to be a twist where the lady with the sword thinks she's got it all figured out, and then Burnham turns on the thing and they realize, uh-oh, we're in real trouble, and then they solve it and they get out of it. And that would have been like, there could have been this extra level of Star Trekiness, which is like a problem to solve involving an alien race that doesn't exist anymore, or that is all in cryo sleep. Like, it was so weird that I wanted that kind of Star Trek moment, and instead it was sort of just waved away as, oh, I fixed it. And that was my frustration with it, is I felt like it was right on the precipice. It had the premise of a really cool Star Trek episode, and they got to this point, and then they were like, "No, we gotta just solve it now." And I'm like, I wish it had been a more fun Star Trek-y kind of problem to solve than just we fixed it.
Well, I agree, but I do think it's interesting, and this might be just me reading into this, right? But I think that the problem here is a different sort of problem, like the lady with the sword. Like, this is an obvious thing that this is a problem the Federation was designed to solve.
Yeah, right?
This is, you need Starfleet to solve this problem for you, because this is what they do.
I mean, literally for a thousand years they've been solving this problem.
And the Federation has gotten to a point, and the universe has gotten to a point, where no one trusts the Federation to do this anymore. Like, they, you don't even turn to them. But in this case, she did. She was like, because basically the question is, well, why don't you just ask for the dilithium and we would have helped you? And she says, I did, and you wouldn't. And so I had to do it myself, and this is how I tried to do it. So I think it's kind of subverting that idea that, you know, the Federation wasn't going to help and didn't particularly care.
Right.
And so she was on her own, and so she had to take her excellent but limited skill set and apply it to this problem. And that turns into hiring a bunch of ninjas, stealing a bunch of dilithium, and moving the planet, moving the moon out of the way of the anomaly.
Of the anomaly, which
she can't wake them up.
Right. Right.
So she has to move it so that someone else maybe can help. So I understand where you're coming from, and I agree with you, but I also think that the writers could have made that dilemma a little more prominent. I feel like it was a kind of quick.
I mean, I think it's the same thing in the sense that they have gone. Like, I think they got this primary plot here is juicy. Mm-hmm. And we have these two secondary plots. And I think this is my frustration with Star Trek Discovery fully committing to this highly serialized, everything is about the story of the season kind of format. Is that I think they have found a good Star Trek story here and then whipped through it way too fast because they have to use the other portions of the episode to advance this character plot and advance this character plot. And it's like the character development stuff is not bad at all, but you're left with kind of cutting corners on what I think is kind of a cool idea. And I agree, like, I got frustrated because I'm sitting there thinking, well, could you have gone to somebody at Starfleet or in Navarre and said, I found an alien race that's asleep and we need to wake them up, and gotten, like, could you have worked through channels? And it just seems like, I guess I like the idea that nobody trusts the Federation, but it's also kind of frustrating because it feels like she turned to hiring mercenaries and killing people. It feels like awfully quick. and I, by the way, I love that scene where we see it reflected in the eye of the dying empathy telepathic alien who has warned her of their presence, and she's there killing all of the grave robbers who are trying to steal their bodies because they have latinum in their bodies. And nice as stuff. His, like, nictating third eye closes, like, she kills them all and comes over to him, but he's dying. Like, that's such a great scene. And it implies so much about, like, what this wild Star Trek story is that's happening. But we see almost none of it. And, like, I get that, you know, leave him wanting more, but I'm watching Star Trek. I want a little more.
Well, that is true. But I think that she just doesn't trust them.
And, I don't know. And, maybe it's just the details. Maybe I just wanted a little bit of a stronger argument about I can't trust the Federation than I got. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think I don't know if she actually ever says that, so that could be a problem
too.
It's
more like your bureaucracy
reading into it.
Doesn't serve individuals, and I would have had to tell them where this was, and I didn't want to do that, and so.
Right.
Yeah, which is the implication there is I don't trust the Federation enough to reveal the location of these people that you might not take care of.
Federation doesn't want Latinum, one assumes.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? But
I don't know.
Anyway, I thought this was a really cool setup, and I think it's okay. I like that Tilly is there, like, oh, I really did a number on this thing. It's the opposite of Scotty. It's like, this might take a long time to fix.
While I really broke it.
While Burnham does her, you know, like, boop, boop, boop. Oh, they're all okay now.
I did like when she appeared, the sword nun appears, and Tilly says, I choose to live. I totally choose to live. I will stop.
Please don't stab me.
Nope. Don't need you to kill me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that plot is fun. I wanted more of it, and I wanted it to be a little bit more twisty. And that was my frustration was it's a good kind of frustration, right? It's like, oh, you came up with a good one here, and then you just kind of, you know, you got out of it a little too easily, a little too fast, and I wish they had done a little bit more with that, because I felt like this was actually the bones of a classic Star Trek story, in the sense of especially thinking about original series Star Trek, like, you know, they're all asleep, and they haven't woken up, and there's a defender of them, and they don't know how to turn it on, and like there's it's interesting here, and I like at the end that all the ships come out and they're flying down to their planet now, and you know I hope the anomaly doesn't come this way, because they'll have to go back in their dumb moon and take it somewhere else.
Again.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it was a very Space 1999 kind of thought, right? Which is the moon is, they just, the moon heads off to somewhere else.
It's peace out.
Yeah.
And very well illustrated hieroglyphs in the control room there to explain their story to anyone who might be passing by. So that's
right. Before we go to sleep, let's put up some pictograms explaining what is going on here.
Just in case.
Yeah.
You never know when your systems may fail. And this is really, this is a story about choosing your contractors carefully, because I do think that the sword lady didn't want to kill a lot of people, but she hired these ninjas who really wanted to kill people, and so they killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, that again, I think the script kind of elides a bunch. Like, boy, didn't she ask for other help from other nuns, or did she, like, these are the only mercenaries she could afford, or I don't know.
It's but they're tough out there.
They're kind of thugs, and they all pay. They all die. Fairly easily killed.
Burnham's mom kills them all. So.
Yeah.
Burnham kills maybe
What do you think of the undercurrent here at the end, which is kind of interesting, which is we're gonna give this murderous nun back to Navarre to deal with, and everybody's sort of looking at each other like, you know, but she killed a Starfleet officer on a starship, so shouldn't we prosecute? But instead we're going to hand her over to Navarre because of diplomacy, and they'll presumably punish her, but will we get our, you know, and there's that question
of
like,
pound of flesh.
Is justice served? And I thought, you know, and
he,
Admiral uses the, you know, Vance uses the, she's the conductor, we're the people in the orchestra kind of thing. What did you think about that?
So I think that there is an interesting story to be told between someone who is in a Michael Burnham role and someone who is in the president of the Federation's role, right?
Right.
And I think that they have, as we have complained about many times on this podcast, skipped over a lot of steps to get to this tension, right? Because it, to me, it still doesn't make any sense that Burnham is so deeply antagonistic towards the president. Sure, she did a little backseat driving, and that was annoying, right? But Michael Burnham was raised by Vulcans. Vulcans are all about the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. Any death is tragic, don't get me wrong. But the president's point is, you know, we need to, like, having Navarre join the Federation is going to benefit millions and millions of people, whereas, you know, us punishing this warrior for killing one person is just going to make us feel better a little bit, briefly.
Right.
So,
and she also saved a whole race of people who were otherwise going to die, right?
So, which is a good thing. So,
not that she doesn't – well, and also there's no assumption here that that Navarre is not going to punish her.
Right, she's not just gonna. One assumes they're not just gonna be like, "Good job."
Yeah, that's
Know, nearly
go just go off back somewhere where the Federation can't see you, and on this island, and we're gonna, and you'll be fine.
It'll all be fine. Like, she's a member of a religious order. One assumes that they have,
she's,
you know,
have
rules
to do
about things,
penance, or, you know, wear sackcloth and dine on ashes, and all the bad stuff that you have to do when you're bad in a religious order. Yeah, I also was bugged, and I get. I like that you're putting this argument in the mouth of our main character, because I think that's a fun thing for a TV show to do, is make your main character kind of question premises of your show. But it did bug me because it's the, you know, he had a partner and kids, and is justice served by this? And that really sets me off, because I am one of my least favorite things in kind of the real world is the idea that the victims and the family of the victims must be satisfied for justice to be served in our society. And so it bugged me that Burnham says that same thing, which is like, this person who did a bad thing being punished is important. But the family of the person who died getting some sort of approval over what form the punishment is, because if they don't get to see it, it's a little too... And this is something from our culture. It's a little too much about revenge than about justice. Like, you want to see the person punished. That's the most important thing. Satisfying the friends of the victim is not the point. The point is to punish the people who did the bad thing. So Burnham questioning this, and Vance being like, again, Vance very conveniently absent like, when he doesn't need to be around, is like, well, look, I'm the rhythm section here. I'm just banging on a bongo back in the back. I don't look at me.
I can do nothing.
Yeah, I got. I mean, she's the conductor.
She's the boss.
Yeah, which I mean, she is.
She is. He could push back a little bit.
He maybe does. But
and,
I don't
behind the scenes. That doesn't really, I mean, that's not the story they're telling, but I just think it's weird. Like, I know where Burnham is coming from. Like, she's like, oh, they killed a Starfleet officer. We should be involved somehow. But given the context, it seems like the obvious right choice is to release her back to Navarre and have them deal with it. And then, you know, trust that their process will work.
Yeah.
And then they can join the Federation.
Because there is no evidence that Navarre is going to put her on that tropical island, right?
They're going to lock her in a conference room and make her sit around with scientists meditating.
And not meditate. She's not going to be allowed to meditate.
She won't be able to meditate.
Ever.
Everybody else will.
The worst. Yeah.
She has to get that tea for them, the emotional tea.
Feel better emotion tea. Yeah, I think it's interesting. And obviously, it looks to me like Navarre plays a bigger part in this season, that this is all sort of setting us up for more Navarre kind of related stuff. I don't know if that's the case, but that's just my gut feeling because we've spent so much time with them so far. And I think that's good. I think the Vulcans are an interesting part of Star Trek on their own. And the idea of this reformed Vulcan Romulan thing trying to re-enter the Federation and like what does that all mean? I think that's good stuff to dig into. So I'm glad they're digging into it.
I agree. You can't have the Federation without Vulcans silently, or sometimes not so silently, judging everything that you do.
Well, now the Romulans will just actively judge it, which is even better.
Exactly. And they won't lie about it. So it's great. I guess not all Romulans are like that, but some
of them. The special, the nuns are. Well, clearly, the Vulcans have elevated the warrior nuns to a position of prominence in Navarian society because they're their kind of people. Which is, grumpy and truthful, I guess. I don't know. Something like that. Anyway, I like this episode. Like I said, frustrated because I think it could have been even better. But it's fine, and I hope Gray has a good time on Trill as a guardian, and we don't see him for a while.
Oh, dear. And I am glad. I will tell you one thing that I loved about this episode. I was worried for a second because, Gray... There was some, will Gray come back or won't Gray come back?
Right.
I was pretty sure Gray would come back. But I was worried that Gray was going to come back and, gasp and then say, oh, I know what the anomaly is or something like that. And I'm like, ugh, no. No, you don't. Why do you know?
And that would have annoyed me.
And that didn't happen. So
not even a little.
You. Nope. He just woke up and he was him and an emotional scene. And that was nice.
Yeah. I agree.
That's all I wanted from that. And then I agree with you. He can – not that I have anything against Gray, but we've got a lot of characters that we need to keep track of.
A lot of characters.
That are actually have jobs on the Discovery. So,
well, they introduced Gray and Adira together, and I think Adira is a fun, interesting character as this – again, in this some classic Star Trek, Wesley-like in a way. But, they're a genius – who is also from a different time than the rest of the crew, but they're trying to adapt and interesting and a human with a Trill inside. Like there's some, which they've done not a lot with, right? Like I think there's interesting stuff with Adira and I think that actor is fascinating and interesting. And I want to keep them around. Gray, I feel like Gray's story arc is essentially, oh no, I don't have a body. Now I do. Goodbye. So if they're going to do something else with him, okay, but I'm not quite sure what that is. And I'm okay if they don't because there are a lot of characters here. Lots.
So many characters.
So many characters.
Characters are welcome. So many.
Yeah, many. Just like USA. Mm-hmm. Maybe they should get Monk to be...
I would love Adrian Monk to somehow... he has a synthetic body and he is resurrected onto Discovery for some reason.
Yeah.
They have to figure out, a murder.
A murder. Yeah, there's a murder. And Dr. Culper can give him advice because apparently he's good at that now.
That's right. And we know Adrian Monk needs as much advice as he can get.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Well, they don't. I was about to say they keep Discovery pretty clean, but they don't. because of all those pebbles that are around. So that's something that he could help with as well.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we've solved it. Mm-hmm.